Morning, and welcome to take number 58 of this message. If I get all the way through this one, I will be totally shocked and unbelievably happy to have actually accomplished it. So, that being said, hey, we are today beginning an 8-week series called The Gospel. What we have here is a failure to communicate. And I have to wonder how many people catch the cultural link there with our tag phrase, what we have here is a failure to communicate. If you got the reference, you understand that it's from the movie Cool Hand Luke. So good for you. If you didn't get the reference, I don't want you to feel bad because the movie's very old, 53 years old. So if you didn't get it, there's a good chance you're a younger person. And so good for you. Excuse me. So in this 8-week series, what we're going to do is we're going to, as a teaching team, explore a dilemma that we are all trying to contend with. Pardon me for a second. That's part of the reason it's been 58 takes. Okay, so we're going to talk about a dilemma that we all face. It's kind of a communication dilemma, really. What do we do with the gospel? So let me start like this. I assume that most of you, maybe all of you, like me, believe that the gospel is the key to salvation. I mean, we saw that verse in the very beginning, right? I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for salvation. And I assume that most of you, maybe all of you, would take the next step with me and say that not only is the gospel key to salvation, it's the centerpiece of my life. It's my true north. It's how I try to live my life. And certainly I try to do that. I'm imperfect, but that's my goal. Maybe take one more step with me and say not only is the gospel central for salvation, not only is it central for my life, but it has transformed my life. And I can certainly look back at my life and I can see a very clear fork in the road where I was going one way, the gospel invaded my life, and my life took a completely different trajectory because of that. And maybe you'd go one more step with me and say, not only is the gospel key to salvation, not only is it central to my life, not only has it brought me transformation, but I know I'm supposed to share it. And therein comes our problem, the beginning of our dilemma. How do we do that? So let me put in context of my own life. So I think I'm in a pretty unique situation in that I am, at my job, expected to be a spiritual person. I'm a designated spiritual person. People expect me to talk about the Bible. They expect me to be able to pray. They expect me to be able to do any of that stuff at the drop of a hat. And I could go a little farther and say, in all humility, that I'm liked at my job, that they respect me, that they think I bring something valuable to our team and to our operation. And I've even been asked a time or two by some of my coworkers about a spiritual issue. So it's as good a setup as you could get. But I look sometimes at the people that I haven't talked to, or maybe don't know that well. And I wonder, if the opportunity presented itself, how would I share the gospel with them? What would you do? I've asked people many times over the years, what is the gospel? And they usually say, the most common answer, let me put it that way, the most common answer I get from people is, the gospel is Jesus died for my sins. So is that the place that we begin, to say Jesus died for my sins? Or maybe you begin with, well, God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life. That's certainly an easier place to start, and that's a more popular way to start. But I think there's a couple of problems with both of those approaches. First problem is, I don't think people are really looking for those. I don't think people are thinking to themselves, well, I'm a sinner. How do I solve that? I want God's forgiveness. How do I find that? I don't think that's even on their radar. I think there's so many steps between here and there, we can't really cross that distance. I also think that people aren't, for the most part, thinking about how a relationship with God would somehow make them better, more fulfilled, happier, and so on. The other problem is, both of these ideas, they aren't really all there is to the gospel. Bruxy Cavey, now there's a name for you, he says this, so as God loves you and has a wonderful plan for your life, the gospel, yes, it is. Is it the fullness of the gospel? No way. Is Jesus died for your sins, rose again so we can be reconciled with God, the gospel? Yes. Is it the fullness of the gospel? Not even close. So you see, there's our dilemma. We know we're supposed to talk about the gospel. We can see its power in our own lives. But we don't really know how to talk about it, and we don't really know what people are looking for. We don't know what their questions are. We don't know how the gospel might fit with them in a way that they could understand. Well, so for the next 8 weeks, that's what we're going to talk about. That's what we're going to explore as a teaching team. How can we bridge that gap? How can we resolve this dilemma? In that, we're going to teach you a thing, the gospel in 30 words, which goes like this. Jesus is God with us, come to show us God's love, save us from sin, set up God's kingdom, and shut down religion so that we can share in God's life. Really simple. Every week, a different member of our teaching team is going to take a portion from this phrase and they're going to flesh it out. They're going to fill it out with theology, with Bible verses, with their own experience, and various things like that to help us understand the gospel in 30 words. And the idea with this is not that this gospel in 30 words would become like the thing you could say, like you could call people up or go see people at work and say, have you heard the gospel in 30 words? It's not that. What we want to do is we want to change our mental architecture. So the gospel in 30 words, it's going to be our framework upon which we're going to build the house, so to speak, upon which we'll think about and be able to be conversant with the gospel. The other thing we're going to talk about is we're going to talk about contemporary people and where they are coming from and what they're thinking. That's maybe not the best way to put it. Let me just say it like this, because in a couple minutes I'm going to explain it more fully. There are universals. There are universals that you and I share, other people share around the world. And so, and people are telling us all the time what they think about those. We're saying to other people all the time what we think about those, where we have fears or needs or wants or we feel good and so on. So we're going to talk about being able to see those things. Okay, so here's what you have to do. We want you to do some things over the next 8 weeks with us. The first thing we want you to do is to read this book, Reunion by Bruxy Cavey. So Bruxy Cavey is an Anabaptist pastor from Canada. He wrote The Gospel in 30 Words, and he's our conversation partner for this series. You know, he's been through this, he's talked about this, he's led his church in a particular way, and so we're all reading his book, and we're reading it as a conversation piece. We talk to each other about it, but also we want to interact with Cavey himself. And we'll be using it in the series. Now, when I say we're going to be using it, we won't be using it in like this methodical way where, okay, message 5 corresponds to chapter 5 and so on. Again, he's our conversation partner. In fact, there may be times where we disagree with him, and you're free to disagree with him too. He's one part of the conversation we're having. So buy the book, read the book. Second thing, we want you to memorize the gospel in 30 words. And again, Jesus is God with us, come to show us God's love, save us from sin, set up God's kingdom, shut down religion so we can share in God's life. We want you to memorize it, because as you are memorizing it, you're going to be putting that framework deep into your mind. And as you're reading the book, as you're listening to the messages, you know, you're going to begin to build something substantial there that will help you. This is going to be our piece for the gospel side of it. Now, the third thing we want you to do is we want you to listen to contemporary people. Now notice that phrase, contemporary people. We are not saying unsaved, unbelievers, unchurched, the lost, the fallen, anything like that, because we aren't thinking about people as targets. And all of those words make them targets. What we're wanting to do is we're wanting to learn to listen and love the people close to us so that if God presented the opportunity, we could present the gospel to them. That's it. If God presented the opportunity. So contemporary people. I'm a contemporary person. You're a contemporary person. We all have contemporary people in our life. Now, I mentioned a couple minutes ago these kind of universals. So we're going to be drawing on something that I want to introduce to you today. It's something you may know something about already. It's referred to as Maslow's hierarchy of needs. So Abraham Maslow was a psychiatrist in the mid-40s. He developed this idea that we are motivated to fulfill our needs. And these needs, some of them are very basic. You know, they are needs for survival, but some are higher level needs. They're needs that we become in touch with as we feel better, as we feel safer, and so on, and we begin to pursue those. And he even saw it as a kind of thing where over life, as we, you know, fill them, we kind of move up the pyramid, so to speak. He had 5 levels. In more recent years, has been fleshed out to 8. And so what I want you to understand is these 8 different things, these are universals. These are things we actually talk about all the time. We just don't think about them the way Maslow thought about them. And when we learn them, or we have some understanding of them, we can realize when people are telling us something about their soul. And it's not, again, so that, okay, we can find out, oh, so you have a self-esteem need, and that's important to you, so I'm gonna plug that hole with the gospel necessary, so we can love them. Love them in truth, and maybe God will, out of His goodness, provide a way for us to have a conversation with them. That's what it's about. Now, here are the 8 different needs. And again, there's basic needs and there's higher level needs. The basic needs, the 4 at the bottom of the pyramid, the first one is physiological needs. You know, we need to eat, we need to sleep, we need to have a little bit of shelter, and so on. That's the most basic need. Without that, there is no life. So, you know, when you see the houseless person at the freeway or at a Target or, you know, some shopping center with their sign, maybe you drive by and you think, well, that person, they just want that money because they're going to buy drugs or booze or whatever, and so on. That might be the case, but what I want us to see is these people are actually experiencing stress at the most basic level of human existence. Where will I sleep? Where will I eat? What will I eat? And so on. They may not be approaching it in the most socially acceptable way, but they actually have limited resources to be able to do that. That's why they're there. But once we have that need met, then we come up to the second level. The second level is safety and security. So once I know that I'm going to have food in my belly, I'm going to be able to sleep at night safely, and so on, now I'm concerned about the greater safety in my life, the greater security in my life. Will my life go forward in a way that makes some sense to me? You know, can I trust things? And so sometimes people will say to us something like, you know, my boss is a total cretin and I hate my job, but oh gosh, I got to keep the paycheck. Well, you know what they're saying? I'm experiencing stress that I can't resolve at this second basic need. You know, if you've ever been fired, and God forbid that ever happened to anybody, but if you've ever been fired or in this pandemic your business has gone away or whatever, you know, you know it's a deep feeling in the pit of your stomach when your life is threatened. Well, what you're experiencing is that second level of need. So the third need then is love and belonging. Once I know that I'm full, got a place to sleep, I'm safe, things are going to go forward for me, well, now I start to think about friendship. I start to think about intimacy. I start to think about inviting people into my life. What community do I belong to? And so on. And so when people are looking for friends, well, they're dealing with that level of need. When people say things to us like I'm lonely and so on, they're expressing, hey, here's my soul. I'm opening it up to you that I'm feeling a very deep need, a universal need, one you've felt. The fourth level is self-esteem. And Maslow saw that kind of go in two ways. One is that what other people think of us, and then secondly, what we think about ourselves. And you can kind of see these working together. You know, if you've come from a dysfunctional family or you know people who have dysfunctional backgrounds, it really robs this from people. Even from the people who are successful in those families, they're always trying to kind of fill that need, trying to like name drop, trying to get people to notice them. And so what people are saying, they're not trying to be annoying or difficult. They're letting us know, hey, here's a problem with my soul. Here's where things aren't really good for me. But once we meet those 4 needs, now we're able to think about the higher level needs, the growth needs. And the fifth one, so this is a motivation that I have big time. It's a motivation for knowledge and understanding. You know, I want to know things. Like, I love to stumble on something that I only know just a little bit about. And then I can't get enough. It's like a drug for me. I want to know, why is it that way? Where did that come from? Read a few books, listen to some podcasts, talk to some people, whatever it takes. Maybe take a class, but because once I know what it is, once I can unpack it like that, well, I can move on to the next question. But I get a tremendous amount of, emotional strength from that. I meet that need. I feel good. I feel better in life. It's a higher level need. The sixth level is aesthetics, which has to do with beauty. It has to do with creativity, with music. I know a lot of you musicians, you actors, you're probably deeply motivated at this level. You know, you can't not act. You can't not play your instrument or, you know, write music and so on, because It's just a deep need. It's a part of your soul. And when you present something to us, well, you're sharing a bit of your soul with us. The seventh one is, my memory is failing me now. What is the seventh one called? It is, it's like self-fulfillment. I'm sorry, you can see the thing for yourself. Anyway, I can explain what it is if I can't remember the name. So, self-actualization. Oh, thank you, memory. But anyway, after we meet these other needs, now we begin to think about myself. Am I a good person? Am I living a good life? Am I a moral person? Am I doing good to people like me? Am I a benefit to the world around me? These are all self-actualization needs. Is my life worthwhile? You know, the last 2 weeks, Jenny and Catherine talked about, from different kind of perspectives, they talked about the false self. So see, like the worrying about the false self, well, that's a need at that very high level. You know, we're motivated to kind of want to fix that. A lot of the spiritual, the deeper spiritual things, they come from that particular part of our life. That's our soul. We want to know about that. And then the top need is transcendence. And transcendence means I live for other people. So, you know, you think about the great Christians of the 20th century, who were they? You know, I would nominate at least these three: Martin Luther King Jr., Dietrich Bonhoeffer, Mother Teresa. What did they all do? They all live for other people. They all sacrifice for other people. They had gotten to that transcendent place. So again, what I'm saying is, let's learn to listen to the contemporary people in our life. Listen to what they're saying, because they're telling us something from this pyramid about their heart, about their life. And maybe, just maybe, if we really love them and we really have rearranged our mental architecture, we might be able to say something to them about the gospel. Fourth thing we want you to do is we want you to pray specifically for five people to invite them to Alpha. Now, this could sound a little bit like a bait and switch. I just said we're not talking about people as targets and so on, and we're not. But here's the thing. If you really take this journey with us mentally and spiritually and then relationally, looking at people with love and seeing, you know, the needs in their soul, you're going to want to do something with that. And Alpha is ideal. It is designed exactly for contemporary people. It honors all questions, helps people go forward to understand what the gospel has to offer them without, you know, kind of pounding it on them or playing into preconceived notions and so on. It's really brilliant. I want you to pray for a specific number because I want you to be focused on that. I want you to be focused on sharing the gospel. Again, when God gives the opportunity. And then the last thing we want you to do is we want you to come to Alpha yourself. Even if you don't bring anybody, that's okay. If you pray and God doesn't open any opportunities for you, that's on Him. That's not on you. Still, please come to Alpha next year when we open it up, because between the learning, the mental architecture, that part of it, between the spiritual part of it, between talking about people's needs, hearing the stories of all the people on the teaching team, reading the book and all that, and then going to Alpha, it's really going to help you become a person who can spend the rest of your days being conversant with the gospel, being the kind of person that God could trust you with somebody. So that's what's going to happen the next 8 weeks. And with the time I have left today, I want to talk just a little bit about salvation, offer some thoughts on salvation. So, because again, you know, we saw that the Romans 1:16 there, Paul says, I'm not ashamed of the gospel because it is the power of God for salvation. So the gospel provides us with salvation. What is salvation anyway? Salvation is a covenant that God initiated for us. Salvation is not a get out of jail free card. Salvation is not some kind of cosmic whiteout that God uses to blot out the bad things written by your name in the book of life. Salvation is not something you have today and then lose tomorrow. Salvation is not like some kind of agreement where you respond to an altar call, you say the right words, and so now God is going to bless your life forever. Salvation is a covenant God initiated for us. That means salvation is God's idea. He started it, He provides the means, and He sustains it. It is His gift. In Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8, Paul says, by grace, you're saved by grace through faith. And this is not of yourselves. It is the gift of God. Salvation is a gift of God. And when we think about the Bible in terms of the meta-narrative and how the gospel fits into that meta-narrative, we tend to think of it in three steps: creation, fall, redemption. You know, God created, it was perfect, it was good, it was innocent. God had face-to-face relationships with people. People rejected him, they rebelled against him, they sinned, and they fell. And after they fell, sin entered the creation along with the death, and things have been bad ever since. But God didn't leave it that way. God redeemed. He redeemed through the work of Jesus Christ, and through Jesus' life, death, resurrection, ascension, and eventual return to earth, God is going to completely redeem creation. Well, that is a perfect thing. I mean, it's biblically correct, it's theologically correct, it works. It helps us understand the Bible. It's been so helpful, even for generations, in helping us understand how to frame the gospel and talk about the gospel. But there is one problem with it. History shows that when we think about the Bible and telling that story and think about the place of the gospel becomes about punishment. It's like God's got to punish that sin. He's got to get back what he lost through that. So fortunately, he punishes Jesus on your behalf. Now, again, we can make a strong biblical case for that. I'm not disputing that. That's one way of looking at it, but it's not the only way. And I want to propose a different way. I would say it begins this way. God is love, and he desires to love and be known. God created out of love. Now, when you create out of love like that, it is by necessity that you give your creation freedom. It has to have freedom so that it can love you back. Now, you know, if I compel you to love me somehow, you don't actually love me. You are compelled, you're forced, your will doesn't ever enter into it. But God, because he's truly good and truly loving, he gave the creation freedom. Well, when you give freedom like that, you create the possibility that the freedom can be abused. And that's exactly what happened. When that freedom was abused, sin entered. And with sin came death. But that didn't stop God. God continued to pursue people, so that he might be known and so that he might love. And as God pursued people, his work of pursuit culminates in the life, death, and resurrection of Jesus. Jesus is God with us, come to show us God's love, save us from sin, set up God's kingdom, and shut down religion so that we can enter into God's life. Jesus came out of love to be able to provide our way back into knowing God and experiencing his love. So, I said that love requires freedom. It requires another thing. It requires limits. It requires boundaries for it to be love. I love my wife, and so there are boundaries around that relationship. You know, there are things I don't do. There are things that she doesn't do. There are things I do, things that she does do, because we have true love for each other. There has to be a boundary. There has to be limits. There has to be a relationship, and God has a special kind of relationship. A covenant. And of course, this is a very important biblical word. God invites people into covenants. Now, a covenant would have an entry point, often a ceremony, just like a wedding. It will have promises, vows that the parties will make toward one another. Those form the limits. Those form the boundaries around the relationship. And then because of these boundaries, people now they have a way within the relationship to forgive each other, they have a way to talk about things, they have a way to grow, they have a way to care for each other. So God invites us into his eternal covenant. So salvation is being brought into this covenant where we can experience the love of God and the knowledge of God. Now, a point to make. When you look at the Bible, if you look at this word covenant, man, there's a lot of them. There's a covenant with Noah, a covenant with Abraham, covenant circumcision, there's the law. Jesus is saying, you know, on the night before he dies, this is the new covenant in my blood. And there's certainly a lot of history in Christian theology, you know, kind of debating over that. Some people say that, well, there's the old covenant and the new covenant. The old covenant was for the Jews. Jesus brought the new covenant. That's what he's talking about. And the new covenant now supersedes the old one and so on. I don't see it that way. I see it this way, that God actually made an initial covenant with people. I will be your God, you will be my people. And every covenant he's made since then is an ever-expanding promise, which is fulfilled in Jesus Christ. It's important to know this for a couple of reasons. One is, the idea of these two covenants has been at times, maybe not recently, used for anti-Semitism. But also, when you read Bruxy, you could read him to be a little bit of this old New Testament thing, and I want you to feel free to argue with him on that point. So God invites us into this covenant. Now, in this covenant, we experience something. We experience shalom. Now, I know this is a really popular word at the Ventura Vineyard. I'm not going to go real in depth into it because, for one thing, I'm probably five concepts over the concept limit in this message to begin with. But also, we've had a couple of really great messages, one by Catherine, one by Wayne, about shalom. And if I can find them, I'll put them in the notes, which I hope you are downloading from your device. But let's just say for now, that shalom, the love of or the life that God has for us, the peace that God has for us, it includes things like harmony, wholeness, completion, wellness, tranquility, and so on. And I think that if we could become aware of shalom and we could experience it ourselves, we might find that the very things that shalom has to offer are exactly the things that Maslow was talking about that we need and we experience often in such painful ways. So salvation is a covenant that God has initiated for us. He gave it to us. He gave the means. He sustains it. It's a covenant of love. We enter it as a gift. It is our gift. By faith we enter as a gift of God to us. You don't have it one day and then not have it the next. Inside the covenant, you experience the shalom of God. We experience the shalom of God, which is a wonderful, wonderful thing. So, I hope that you will stay with us now for the next 8 weeks as we make our way through this series, The Gospel. What we have here is a failure to communicate, and that you will personally benefit by it. Now, before I turn it over to
Shelby,
I forgot to mention one thing. Please download the notes from your app, because I really took some time and I made them as complete as possible, because I think I said a lot in this message, and I want you to be able to have that for reference. Also, there's some links in there. Now, the links probably won't be live when you download. You'll have to cut and paste, but one of them is to a website where there's a 21-minute video this young woman does on Maslow's hierarchy of needs. Highly suggest you watch that a few times. That will really help you kind of get that into your thinking. Second thing, going back to our gospel in 30 words, the last line of Cavey's gospel, you know, or the 30 gospel in 30 words, you know, that Jesus came to shut down religion so that we can share in the life of God. So that language, it's a little inflammatory, don't you think? I mean, it is definitely. I'm a person who likes inflammatory language, but I realize I'm not the majority of people. But I want you to understand what he's saying there. He's not saying like we get rid of a liturgy or the Bible or hymnals. We don't go to church. We hate the Catholic Church. We hate the Protestant Church. He's not saying those kind of things at all. What he talks about in the book is how we have this tendency to construct these ways to deal with God or to kind of meet our needs without God. That's religion. And God is inviting us into a relationship. Now, for him to say, shut down religion, you notice that the whole gospel in 30 words, it's alliterated. And so, you know, Jesus is God with us, come to show us God's love, save us from sin, set up God's kingdom, shut down religion so we can share in God's life. He's trying to make it a little easy for us to remember. So I just want you to understand that's where he's coming from. So, we made it to the end of take 58. There will be no take 59. I don't care what happens. So let me pray and turn it over to
Shelby.
So God, we now are going to worship you. We want to know better. We want to be better. We want the gospel to shape our thinking in a real way. We want to love the contemporary people in our lives. We are submitting our hearts, our minds, our souls to you for the next 8 weeks. We're asking you to walk through them liberally. Please tear down the things that keep us from understanding clearly and help us build up the things that will help us be faithful to you in this time. In Jesus' name, amen.